This is CliffCentral.com.
Every Christmas Eve, my brother would go to bed at 6:30. He would say goodnight right in the middle of scheme sum. And my mom and I, we'd be looking at him like, and then? The only reason why he's doing it is because he wants Christmas to come sooner. He is 27, my guy. 27.
The combination meal, inspired by seven colors, is something for everyone. Nando's, fire it up.
Yay! That's just about as much excitement I can muster this morning. Very good morning. It is a Friday, bright and frickin' early. That's what I love the most is after the longest amount of time of doing this show, countless times I often think about the fact that we never really get used to a couple of things. One of them being how early we wake up. What another being the fact that it's like days still go by, we get surprised by how long weeks are, or how long the year is going, or the fact that we're finally nearing the end of the year. But it's those little things. And you know what? We'll still sometimes complain about how early it is, but it's all worth it because we're here. So thank you so much for having us on. My name is Sia. This is the Gareth Cliff Show. And I'm just chinchilling as well with Amanda. Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great, actually.
you're another nutcase, and that's a whole other scenario that we'll get to you sitting there with your glasses on. I'm kind of rolling solo, and you know, this is uncensored, unradio, and unconventional as well. So, Gord is on his way. He's having, like, a bit of a crazy morning, and he's running late. Mabale, for the oddest of reasons, I got a panic of a message from her this morning. She's actually down in the dumps and feeling sick, so she won't be here for the show. And yes, as you can probably do the math if you were listening to the show yesterday, Ben is on his way to Cape Town, so he's not in studio. And another person who I basically feel like is living his best life, and actually let's chat to him now just to make us green with envy, is Gareth, who's in Mozambique for a music festival. Hey, Gareth.
Hello, Sia. How are you?
I'm fantastic, thank you. How are you?
Good. I'm actually looking out over the Indian Ocean right now.
You know, like, I was wondering how long it would actually take for us here to actually feel envious even more right now. So you are what? You're in your hotel room in Mozambique?
I'm sitting down in reception because there's a better signal down here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cloudy day, so you don't have to be too generous. It's not like I'm sitting outside.
I'm
looking out of the window, and there are fishermen on a boat that are heading out into the sea to go and catch some fish this morning. And the breakfast is only opening at 6:30, so I thought I'd, you know, why not talk to you instead?
Well,
and everybody else, including me, only got to bed last night at maybe 12:30, 1:00.
Jeez. Is that the whole... What exactly is happening in Mozambique? All I know is you were away for the music festival. What music festival is this, and what's exactly going on?
We're really doing a couple of things. There's a music festival on, the Maputo Music Meeting,
mm-hmm.
which consists of showcasing some local artists, and there's some very, very interesting people here. I mean, people from all over the world who've come to kind of see what Mozambican music's all about. We saw some original kind of indigenous music on the first night, which was xylophones and that kind of thing, and then there was some guys with guitars and some guys with drums and keyboards, and then some real bands, and then singers. And so it's been incredible. It's been a real mix. The other reason we're here is I came out as a guest in Nando's, so we went to see the farm where they farm the peri-peri, the chilies, where they grow those.
Oh, wow.
Incredible. Yeah, and then this morning, we're going out quite early to go and spray for mosquitoes. You know, one of the things that Robbie Brosen's Goodbye Malaria team does here in Mozambique is that they're trying to eradicate malaria from Maputo province,
mm-hmm.
which is the southernmost province in Mozambique. And what they do is they actually have insecticides that they go into houses and spray, because if you spray in the house, you can guarantee that family, when they sleep at night, will be safe for 9 months after the spraying has taken place. So it's really the only safe, sensible way to combat malaria, which, of course, is the biggest killer in Africa. You know that.
Yeah, and it's actually because I don't know why, South Africans always just have this idea. It's actually what Tebe Galifeng was saying when you interviewed him last week, that anything that's just north of our borders, somewhere in the middle of Africa, and we actually forget about these things.
Yeah, I mean, Mozambique is a fascinating country. First of all, it's enormous. If you look at it on the map, everybody thinks it's this kind of, you know, this kind of strip of land that borders the east coast all the way up to Tanzania, but it's actually enormous. There's a huge amount of land, very fertile. There's great vegetation. There's huge room and possibility for development. At the moment, the only people spending any serious money here developing anything are the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
They've just built an enormous, enormous bridge across the estuary from Ponta Douro to Maputo. And it's the biggest suspension bridge in Africa, and they're almost close to completing it. So if you'd come here 6 months ago, you would have said there's no bridge. And if you come here in another 2 or 3 months' time, there will be a brand new bridge, which for people from Durban coming into Maputo will save them 2 hours of traveling.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's also some things that people don't know about Mozambique. It's the second poorest country in the world. There is 98% unemployment here. So there are a lot of people that don't have jobs. There's not a huge daily wage. I think the average person here earns just over $1.80 a day, which is among the worst GDP numbers in the world. It's really very, very sad. You see abject poverty, people as poor as church mice, kind of getting on with their lives and trying to eke out an existence. But there is absolutely no aggression. There is no tension. There is no feeling when you walk the streets of Maputo that there are bad people trying to steal things and people who want to hurt each other and anger and this feeling of deprivation. So despite the fact that things are by and large much, much worse for people in Maputo than they ever would be in Johannesburg or Durban and Cape Town, you get a feeling that here there is none of that. They've had their war. You know, of course, they had the huge war after independence. They had Samora Machel, Joaquim Chissano as president. And ever since then, I think the people of this country have just decided that no matter how angry they are about things that don't seem fair and don't seem right, war is absolutely not to be re-entered. And I think a lot of people here, and they are, obviously, there are a handful of very, very wealthy people. And then there are very many poor people. By and large, the greatest majority of the people here are desperately, desperately poor.
Mm-hmm.
But they try to get on with their lives and try to kind of live. I'm going to walk outside. Let's just see if you can hear the sea. Can you hear that?
No. I'm
standing right on the beach, basically. You can't hear that?
I don't even think I want to hear that, so I'm actually glad I can't.
All right. Well, I'm trying to make it fun for you. Anyway, so what do you want to know? I mean, so far I've really had an incredible day and a half, because we arrived here on Wednesday afternoon at about 5.
Yeah.
Here's something cool that South Africans who don't come to Mozambique might not know. You don't need a visa, so you just need your South African passport. You get on a plane in Joburg. You get off a plane here. You don't need visas. You don't need any special permits. You just walk in. Fantastic.
Look at that. And
the people who were with us from England had to get visas.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
Take that, you British.
I know.
Finally, we have something good on our side.
I climbed into them at the airport. I said, oh, you people in your third world country with the shitty visa and shitty passport. You better make sure that you're okay to come into Mozambique. Don't embarrass us, Africans.
You know, yeah. And like, as you're now retelling the realities of Mozambique, and which is often something that I see with a lot of African countries, African people have this great resilience and this colorful, strong spirit, despite so much that they go through. You know, the narrative that I get and I've seen and heard about, you know, Mozambique and so many other African countries is not this 98% unemployment, isn't this suffering and poverty, but it's the culture and it's the spirit and the mere fact that you're there for this music festival.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, people can, you can look at the negative or you can look at the positive.
Mm.
And I think that there's a lot that's changing on this continent. There's a lot that's improving for the average person in ways that before was not possible. And you can again see the profusion of cellular technology and cell phones. Of course, you think data is expensive in South Africa, you should try it here.
Oh, wow. So probably the concept of what we're doing is a lot for them?
I think that there are people who are starting to get to the point where that's what they want to do, because they're sick of hearing, you know, the kind of run-of-the-mill stuff that terrestrial radio provides. But I don't think that this is going to be the first place where we expand. I mean, it's going to be very difficult. But you know the language here? You know what they speak in Mozambique?
Portuguese?
Correct.
Yes.
One of only about four major countries in the world where Portuguese is the official language.
Oh, wow. Well, Amanda, by the way...
Mozambique, Angola, and Brazil, and then a couple of other little ones like Guinea and, you know, Madeira and those sorts of places. Amanda?
Well, Amanda is now jealous, you know, with her new little lease on life, that you're out there in, like, fishing country.
Yeah, is it, like, is fishing a huge thing there? Is everyone fishing?
No, Amanda, there are only a few people that are fishing. It's not like it's a major thing going on. But there's definitely, I mean, it's, you know, you've got this beautiful ocean. There are lots and lots of fresh fish in it, and people love fresh sustenance. That's where most people get their daily bread, basically.
Are you going to find yourself doing anything touristy, typical touristy there? So fishing is not for you?
No, we're coming back today, so there's not going to be much time for anything else. But I'll definitely update you if there's anything exciting that happens today. And I've taken lots of pictures, so I'm sharing those on Instagram and on Twitter.
Because yesterday on the show, we were pretty convinced. We were like, well, Gareth does like a little time off, but we don't know how he'll fare in a place like Mozambique. No. So we were taking our bets that you're probably sitting on the beach in the sand with a glass of something, but also at the same time with tons of hand sanitizer.
Well, apart from the weather not being good enough to do that, we haven't had very much spare time to be able to do that stuff. So every minute has been catered for, and every minute we're doing something. We're going off to spray houses for malaria this morning. So I'll let you know how that goes.
Yeah, I think it's awesome that you're actually doing this. I really did think you'd be like living it up somewhere in Mozambique, having the best time.
No.
But yeah, I didn't know that there was actually more to this. Huh? Oh, look at you, Gareth Cliff, being a nice person and doing nice things.
I know. No, it's definitely action-packed.
Yeah.
There's no time for messing around.
Well, thanks for giving us this little update.
Sure.
I thought perhaps you'd also be staying the weekend, but what, you're flying back this afternoon?
No, back this afternoon, yeah. Be landing at about 4.
How long's the flight, actually?
45 minutes. You know that Maputo is the closest beach to Johannesburg.
Wow. It's all these little things that, like, actually...
So next time someone says to you, let's go on a holiday and can't decide where to go, it might be cheaper to buy a plane ticket to Maputo and come and stay here than it would be to go all the way down to Durban or to Cape Town or to PE or anything else. So think about that.
Okay, closest beach to Johannesburg. There we go. So,
right.
All right, I'll make a note of that. And then have a safe flight, and we'll see you back on Monday morning.
Monday morning, bright and early. Thanks, dear.
Awesome stuff. Cheers, Gareth.
Cool. Bye.
Well, look at that. I have to say, like, yeah, I actually, you know, the colorful lives that we all live here at Cliff Central, I think the most we all, as we collectively in a room, get to spend together is the 3 hours when we catch up with each other, et cetera, et cetera, because everyone is here then everywhere, you know. If Ben is not out droning, Gareth in meetings, Mabale out at work, Amanda doing Amanda things like fishing, and then, you know, me just bothering everyone with idle random things. You never really know what everyone is up to. And to now hear that, you know, Gareth is out and he has all of these things planned in Mozambique is actually kind of cool.
Very, very cool.
Uh-huh.
But
has your fishing obsession ended now, Amanda?
No, like, I'm actually going this weekend to get a few essentials.
What? Where?
So I was thinking of like outdoor warehouse.
And where are you exactly going fishing?
Well, I have found a few places, but we're looking for somewhere safe because it's just two girls. So it's my friend and I taking on this hobby. So we preferably want to be safe and preferably close because, you know, we could have cocktails while we're fishing.
Got you.
And, yeah, so I'm going out, probably going to get a nice camp chair, rod, and it's going to be a great December.
This is what I'll give kudos to you for. The mere fact that you are making something that is so unglamorous, glamorous.
I think it's going to be beautiful.
I really don't think, like, like, I just don't think fishing can get any sort of classy. It's the smells, it's what you have to wear, it's what you have to endure, and you're actually making it work. So, okay.
It's going to be great. I'm not looking forward to touching the fish. Mm-hmm. I just want to pull them out though, and I don't want them to die either.
Wait, but that is the entire idea of fishing?
No, of course, but you know, people hold it and take photos of, yeah, like, look at my catch, all that stuff. I'm not gonna be.
Are you fishing to pull and eat this fish?
No,
or okay,
no.
So you're fishing to plonk them back in the water?
Yeah, just, you know, gotta start out basic first.
Girl, you should go to a cocktail making course, or you should go to find a great series to watch, something different, but okay, we'll work on that, it's fine. I actually will get into as well, I want to hear what happened to you last night.
Oh, wow.
All I know is you're alive, at least.
I'm alive, last night was a good night, an hour and a half of sleep. I'm hundreds. So at least I got some sleep. And so it's actually not that bad. I feel good.
And even after all of the great advice that Gord and Mabale gave you, you still followed my stupid advice.
I still followed your advice. And like, my friends are like, Amanda, I'm sure people at your work go out. I'm like, yeah, see it does.
No.
And they come to work or out. I'm like, yeah, so I'm sure I could pull it off.
I'm not meant to be the benchmark here. I'm just putting that out there. So yeah, as I did mention a little earlier in the show, Gord Laws is actually here right now. Mabale Moloi is actually feeling sick this morning. Ben is in Cape Town for the Rugby 7s. And you know, I love the fact that I got this amazing rundown of what the Rugby 7s are and what the whole lineup of the weekend is, because I'm that corny idiot who goes around and now tries to sound smart. So every time I get an update from Anthea, I use a bit of that to sound like I know what's happening. So I was name dropping Steinhoff yesterday. I was name dropping the fact that the share price went down. I was name dropping all of that. And then also because I was at drinks with a lot of classy and butt like people, I was name dropping the Rugby Sevens, and they seemed kind of, you know, kind of interested in me and kind of felt like I actually know what I'm talking about. So I think I could impress my, you know, impress people in that way. And yeah, so even though we're all chin-chilling and we're chatting here in studio, the show is as normal. The show goes on and you can always chat and interact with us. You can call us 0861-555-189. You can also Skype us on Cliff Central Studio. You can have your opinion on there. Or you can also WhatsApp us on 0797482090. Robert on WeChat actually as well, that's where you can message us on our official Cliff Central official account, has said morning Sia. Well, by the way, he even says morning Sia Sangweni. Well, okay, thank you, morning Robert Cunningham. He says, while Gareth is away, please can you convince Benjamin to unblock me on the WhatsApp? Robert, I actually don't think you are blocked on WhatsApp. If you're talking about the Cliff Central WhatsApp, no one is actually blocked on here, and I can like assure you of that. We don't do that at all. If it's Ben's personal WhatsApp, well, I don't know if I have really much
the power.
Yeah, much power over that morning, God.
Good morning.
He then goes on to say, it's hard not to take it personally. Askis, Robert. Well, like, yeah, life is tough. He says, please hug Mabale for me.
And you know that if Ben hasn't blocked me, yeah, Robert must have done some shit.
Yeah, what did you actually do, Robert? Dude. First and foremost. And then he says, well, since Mabale isn't in, so Amanda can have my hug. Well, maybe it's because you're making advances with these ladies, trying to get hugs and trying to be overzealous.
Well, it depends whether or not Amanda welcomes the hug.
Yeah.
Or if she's like, no, thank you, my buddy. It's fine.
True.
Where is Mabale?
Mabale Moloi is sick.
Oh, my God. Because I texted you to say I was running late.
No.
And then I got a phone call from Amanda a little bit later. And, like, she's like, where are you? I'm like, no, I texted. I said I was running late. I'm having the most, like, rancid morning ever.
Yeah.
And then she's like, because you know, it's just me and Sienya. Like, this feeling of hurt and guilt in the tone of the voice.
I think, you know, what flashed upon my cell phone screen this morning is probably a scene I never want to see ever again, because it was bloop, your text coming in, and then bloop, Mabale's text. I was like, what is going on with these people?
You know, and it took everything I had. I mean, I got no excuse. That's the only reason I wasn't able to cancel. And I know, because obviously, like, the guys are away. So
yeah.
I'm like, they need me. But I woke up, like, after all my alarm clocks. I went out and had dinner last night with a friend, had a couple of drinks, got in at midnight, chatted with my lady, and went to sleep. And I do not know how you guys do this every day.
Exactly, man. How I started the show off this morning. I said, like, certain things we'll just always complain about. We'll always marvel at how and why we do them. It's just how we flow.
I've done the show, like, for a full week once, and I think I did it for, like, 3 consecutive days once before. And you actually, it's harder because you do it every day, but it's also easier because after, like, the first exhausting day, you kind of go to bed a bit earlier and you get kind of into a rhythm. Doing it once a week, like I do, give or take. I don't know, man. You can't go out for a dinner and have a couple of whiskeys. You can't. So I apologize for being late, but I'm here.
Yeah. God, you aren't late. Everyone else is just early.
I was thinking, like, while the cobwebs were clearing out of my head and I was, like, dangerously driving here.
Yeah.
I was thinking, you know, the only thing for it is actually to just bring a bunch of booze into the studio and we continue to jawl, because then you're not jawling early today. You're jawling late last night.
That is such a mindfuck. I need to process that again. Yeah. We aren't jawling early.
Well, we wouldn't hypothetically have been jawling early in the morning today on Friday. We would have been jawling really late on Thursday.
True. The celebrations just continue.
Just, yeah.
Right?
I had a nap. I had a little mid-jawl nap, and now here I am.
Just a little some.
So what's going on, man? Give me the highlights.
I'm going to give you all of that and so much more in just a bit. But you know what? Let's carry on with the show. Let's get into the 5 things you need to know. Right?
Splendid.
Let's be productive citizens. Let's know.
At least 5.
Yeah, and be informed. Right? And the 5 things you need to know are brought to you proudly by Kalkakia Pizzeria. Look, it's a weekend. Do you want a free pizza? How does that sound to you? With the slices you earn on the Kalkakia Rewards app, you can have these and so much more. All you need to do is download the app from your app store, register, and use your earn code every time you visit a Kalkakia Pizzeria. Your points will add up faster than you know, and it's that simple. You eat, you earn, you repeat. That's it. Kalkakia Pizzeria. They're the reason you absolutely crave pizza.
Yep.
So let's get into the 5 things you need to know this morning. You can use some of these. You'll use them in the water cooler conversation. Sound smarter when you're stuck in line with random people. And so the first thing you need to know is that presidential hopeful and current South African Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa has, for the first time, admitted that while he respects the court process, he believes Fezeka Khuzwayo, also known as Kwezi, was raped by President Jacob Zuma.
Sure.
I know, that's kinda intense too.
So he's kind of like he's sort of throwing shade, but also like with a bit of a hashtag can't prove it type of vibe. It's look, I mean, I know it's not legally proven, but this allegation, I believe it. So he's like, that's like underhanded. Like, I've no love for Jacob Zuma, but at the same time, you're like, look, I mean, I respect that the court said he wasn't guilty, but I personally think he's a rapist.
But why now?
Well, why now, do you think? Because it's game time.
Well, a week before everything goes down at the conference. And what, to make himself seem and come off even better?
Yeah, I think he's just attacking the whole camp.
Well, yeah, I wonder how this tactic will work for him. So this bombshell admission came as Ramaphosa spoke about the difficulty of a black woman to stand up against abuse. He says, "I know how difficult it is for a woman to garner the courage to say, yes, I was raped, so yes, I believe her." This was in an interview and was where he was on a panel with four other presidential hopefuls, including himself, so far, and all three have answered the question by saying they respect court processes. So they blankly and quite straightforwardly ask this question. And asked if he supports white monopoly capital. Yes, this term is still being used around. The deputy president said he would never sell his soul for any interest. Yo, this guy was going out guns blazing yesterday.
What does he mean by that, though?
So his direct quote to this, he says, "I am proud of the position I have been put in, and I will never sell my soul for any interest." So trying to basically say that he has, you know, integrity and he's doing it for the people and he would never betray or take advantage of his position.
But is that like is he calling bullshit on the term white monopoly capital? Or is he like saying he's not about to get involved in that dirty white money?
I think he's saying he knows, or he's not exactly acknowledging that it exists.
Yeah.
And he's not exactly agreeing or disagreeing that other people do it, but he's just saying he would never, you know, play
into
that idea.
It's like saying, "Sia, would you like a peanut butter sandwich?" And you're like, "I really, really like Celine Dion."
So undecided.
But as far as the rape allegation thing, I mean, there's also just the point of the, like, hashtag Me Too. He might just be saying, you know, it's time we start listening to the people that stand up, your Time Magazine Persons of the Year type of a jewel. So that's also the potential. Maybe it's not even a political thing. Maybe he's just like, you know.
I've always been interested and surprised by the fact that South African politics aren't, for example, so manufactured the way we see American politics run. No, in American politics, there's a whole team sitting
campaign
behind
team,
a whole campaign. You'll have the buttons. You'll have the tour bus. You will stop at this old age home. You'll kiss this baby. This is what you'll say. Oh, well, there are sexual allegations in Hollywood. You are going to comment right now and say, "I understand the plight women are going through." Yeah.
You just say what's on your mind.
Exactly. So rounding up the interview as well, Ramaphosa, when asked if he doesn't succeed, would he become Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma's deputy? He answered saying, "We should rally behind whoever is elected as president of the ANC. If I'm not successful, I will have to reflect." Reflect on what? Reflect on whom? Reflect on where?
Yeah, support. But am I willing to be like second in command, man?
I find these answers very diplomatic.
Will I join the team? Yeah, they are. That's diplomacy right there.
And very PC, and I don't want to shake.
Not saying a whole
up.
Bunch. He's basically said, like, respect, you know, he respects people who speak out against abuse. So that's a very politically correct and cool thing to say. But it's the kind of thing loads of people are saying right now.
Yeah.
He's saying, if I lose, I'm going to try not to be a sore loser about it. And he's given a complete non-answer to the volatile question of white monopoly capital. So it's really a bunch of political nothing.
Oh, yeah. So keeping with the great happenings at the ANC, our President Jacob Zuma insists everything possible is being done to ensure next week's ANC elective conference is successful, peaceful, and orderly. So we won't be seeing, I don't know, chairs being thrown around like what happened in, when was it? Like what? Free State? And adding that he's happy to be stepping down as president. Really,
yeah.
Jay-Z?
Jeez.
Okay. Zuma said all of this as he addressed the energy indaba underway in Midrand currently. President Zuma says people don't know how happy he is to be stepping down as ANC president. His direct quote is, "If you come to realize that in 1 week and a few days that Zuma will be president, he will no longer be, and he's very happy." Oh, this is someone else speaking. He says,
is he speaking about himself in the third person?
Well, personally, Sia doesn't mind when other people speak about themselves.
What does
person.
Sia think about
Because Sia, talking? I don't know, Sia just thinks there's something very presumptuous.
That is like when
that
is when you reach the ultimate level of dickhead. It's like,
why does it?
And there
why
are
does it bother
so
people
few
so much?
People who can actually pull it off. The Rock is probably the only person who can speak about himself in the third person, and you're like, yes, I agree with what The Rock feels on this issue. I'm down with The Rock's feelings.
Don't you just hate like those typical interviews and this celebrity will come on and they're like, well, who is Gord Laws? Gord Laws will answer.
And then you always,
well, Gord Laws was.
I think he's deep down he's really just an enthusiastic boy who's living the life of a man and just wants everyone to be loved and accepted. He's a lover but a fighter when pushed.
Well, that's my life, really. I find nothing wrong with it. In wrapping this story up, President Zuma says, as he steps down next week, he's promising to work with whoever emerges victorious at the party's elective conference to ensure a seamless handover. He has acknowledged there's anxiety in the business community about what will transpire at the ANC's conference next week and the impact the outcome of that gathering will have on the country's future.
Mm-hmm. Rightio then.
Yeah, let's move on from that. Third thing you need to know this morning, and the five things you need to know, brought to you by Kalkakio Pizzeria. The South African author of the book, critical of Jacob Zuma's all shenanigans and whatnot and whatnot, Jacques Beau, the author
champion,
of
man.
The Prison's Keeper. Well, he has been summoned by police, but no reason.
But not with charges.
Yeah, has been given for the meeting. So the journalist Jacques Beau alleges millions of dollars in taxpayers' money flowed into the bank accounts of spies and members of President Zuma's government. The president's office has denied the accusations in the book, and Beau basically confirmed in an interview that his attorney had received a request for him to meet with police on Monday or Tuesday. He said that we don't know what the meeting is about. Anyway, we are going to cooperate.
He's such a legend. I know him. I'm fortunate enough to know him through some mutual friends and my former years working in magazine publishing. And obviously, he's a respected journalist, whereas I was just an entertainment hack. But what a hell of a guy, man. He really is a great guy. Lots of fun and best of intentions. And I obviously haven't seen the paperwork and the legwork and the various due diligence that went into the book. But, you know, if Jacques Poe's written something, you can be damn sure he's researched it properly.
Can we get deep for a second?
Mm.
I marvel at people like this who could easily just go with the flow of the way things are.
Oh, dude, he's got a happy business. He's got a lovely...
Absolutely.
He's not married. He's got a lovely life partner lady that he lives with, mm-hmm. and they've got a lovely B&B, and he lives the rustic life, man. He cooks. He's like a... He doesn't need to be going and digging into politicians' dirty laundry, but I think it's a compulsion.
And to do that...
I think it's a vocation. It's a compulsion for real, proper journalists, not guys like me that could, you know, bang together a funny article in an FHM. No, I'm serious. Like, it's a different type of thing. Being a creative writer that can write a little bit of an entertaining story, but being a person who's compelled to go dig into the truth.
Yeah.
And you may never make any money from it. You might get a book out of it. It might sell. You might spend weeks or even months working on what will ultimately become a feature article in a newspaper that lasts for a day and then it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, you can make a living, but very few investigative journalists, you know, live lavish lifestyles. It's hard work. The income to really hard work and risk ratio is not something that would appeal to most people.
Yeah.
But it's like a need. You look at it and you go, there's so much fuckery going on there. I can see it. Everybody knows it. But, like, no one wants to go knocking on doors and digging in gardens for skeletons and that kind of stuff. And these dudes go do it.
And you aren't just pointing at Gord Laws saying, he's kind of a dodgy person.
Gord Laws gets very upset when you point at Gord Laws.
Yes. In the third
Gord
person.
Gord Laws does not believe that you have person. Proof that Gord Laws is, in fact, a dodgy person.
But you are saying the president, the current sitting president of the republic, is nasty and messy.
Yeah.
And you're saying, I believe this to the core and I don't care what happens. Like, you know.
Well, you're not the only person saying it. You're just the person going, and here's proof. Like, here's the story weaves together, paints a picture that you go, oh, yes, well, those things are definitely interlinked. And presuming all of this is true, it's kind of the writing's kind of on the wall. The disputes that can happen afterwards are whether or not it's true, mm-hmm. whether you can make an allegation like that based on the evidence that you do have. And then journalistic integrity comes in, protecting of sources. But honestly, like I said, I can't prove it, but I know I'm fortunate enough to know Jacques a little bit socially, and he's just so passionate, and he's such a good guy. If I had to bet, I would bet that not a word in there hasn't come from multiple sources. He wouldn't just, you know, meet someone in a back alley, they whisper a secret into his ear and gets in the book. He would have done his homework properly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the police wanting to talk to him and not being able to tell him why, I don't know whether that's an intimidation tactic or maybe they just legitimately have some questions. Like, hey, we're investigating something. Your book seems to know a bit about it. Can you point us in the right direction?
No, ma'am, no ham, no turkey, no salami. When I get a call from, you know, police saying they want to talk to me, that's when I'm like, oh, listen, never mind. Let's just stop this book thing. Yeah. We can take it off shelves. Yeah. That's why I really do marvel at the courage, the conviction, the proper need he yeah. had to, you know, bring this to light. I think it's amazing. So
it's selling really well. I mean, I'm not sure where it's at. I know in the weeks following its release, there was a whole bunch of, you know, there was demands for exclusive books to take it off shelves. Mm-hmm. They were restocking it and kind of defiantly not doing that. I don't know if ultimately they did take it off shelves. There was an illegal PDF going around, and if there was a message that came out saying, look, if you can't afford my book for whatever reason, then read the PDF, but rather, you know, try to support the work that's gone into this. And exclusive books were like, we've ordered more and they'll be on shelves soon. I'm not sure whether if they did take it off shelves or not. I don't know if anybody can confirm that, because I kind of lost track of the story. But it seemed to be selling quite well. It seemed to be doing quite well. So it's good that you know, a little bit of reward seemed to be coming from all of the effort and the risk. But that's a secondary concern for these type of hardcore journalist guys. They do it knowing that there's a very good chance no one's going to read it, not going to be a hit. Book's going to end up on the back shelf and then disappear. You take your chances, but hopefully it's making him a little bit of loot.
So the fourth story you need to know this morning, the five things you need to know, we've sort of been interested in keeping our eye on Hollywood, and especially as the Oscars roll around with all of this mess that's happening, what the Oscars will actually do.
It's going to be a prevalent theme, you can be damn sure.
Yeah, so now the Academy of Motion Pictures, which is the body that chooses the Oscars and the Oscar winners, has adopted a code of conduct and warned members it reserves the right to expel anyone who basically disregards the new rules. So this code of conduct sent to more than 8,000 members late on Wednesday and to news media yesterday follows the Academy's expulsion in October of film producer Harvey Weinstein in light of accusations of sexual harassment or assault against him by more than, I actually didn't know this was the official number with Harvey Weinstein, more than 50 women.
Yes, like.
Oh, yeah. So Weinstein is actually, who has, by the way,
I thought it was like a dozen, which mm-hmm. is already plenty of smoke.
Many.
And yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. That's plenty of smoke and plenty of fire, make no mistake. It's not like, oh, I thought he was just a sexual predator of only a dozen women. No, but 50. I mean, like 50 is like an epidemic.
Yeah.
It's like how do you think you're going to get away with it? I know we ham on about this topic.
Really,
and
we crack
flog
our skulls.
Yeah, we flog it
to
death a little
this.
Bit. But for me, it's like, forget Harvey Weinstein and that. When you're doing a thing that only one person needs to prove you're doing it, like if you like selling crack while you're being a movie producer and you like just offering it to everyone. It's a thing where like, so I'm just trying to say, if you recontextualize it outside of the frame of sexual harassment, any heinous activity that you only need to be caught for once in order for it to be a serious and monumental screw up for your career, how do you do it? Because if it's 50, it's 150. Seriously, though, if it's 50, it's 150. This dude's been producing.
Like, these are just the 50 who've spoken out.
Yeah,
you think
yeah.
there are many more who are still quiet?
And I think there's probably some who probably, like, you know, didn't get that far. They felt things were getting a little creepy and sort of went, look, I'm out, mm-hmm. and didn't get as far as where things got really out of hand. I think, like, you know, it's not always the perfect environment. You don't always get the you don't always get the person at the time into your hotel room for the and take your robe off and be like, let's massage like his creepy shit. I think there's a lot of approaches that probably don't get him quite where he wants to get. But the point is, he's seemed to be trying this on with bloody everyone.
Yeah.
Like, how do you, in any job or line of work where you're doing a seemingly respectable line of work and you're doing something sketchy literally all the time, you only need to get caught once, how do you expect, if you sexually harass or assault or whatever 50 women, which, like I said, if it's 50, it's probably 250.
Yeah.
How do you expect you're never going to get caught for that? What part of your brain says, I'm cool, I can carry on doing this every damn time?
The only way I would try to make sense of actions like these is you don't even think about it because you're living in such a yes world.
Yeah.
And I always try to eloquently put this out there, but I really don't think we can ever understand what it's like to be someone in Harvey Weinstein's shoes, because your entire reality is not what you and I experience. You do not like...
You don't live on the same planet.
No. You don't even know what the price of bread is.
Well, it's like, obviously we all fantasize.
Because you ship in your bread from Italy. Yeah. At this, you know,
or, well, there's a bread guy.
Exactly.
You don't have to worry about
no,
that.
No, you have a house manager who manages groceries. You don't even know where your pantry is.
I always think, like, you know, I like to think that if there's thousands of people like this, I don't know what the number is of people living in this kind of world. We have millions, and you're running businesses that run millions.
Yeah.
But I'd like to think, hopefully, those most people who live in the space planet, where bread doesn't cost anything, and there's a bread manager for your life.
Yeah.
Most people don't become utterly corrupted by it, but we all sit and wonder.
But
sometimes.
I think it's very easy, though.
Yeah, sure.
To fall
absolutely.
Into
and whatever predispositions you have towards giving into temptation or towards, like, if you have pre-existing sketchiness that sitting in your psyche somewhere, it will come to the fore if you enable someone to say, okay, you will get away with whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be like, well, what am I really deep down do I wish I could do?
Yeah.
But I like to think that most people, you know, more people than not would be able to remain. I don't think it's an excuse, is I think what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like, oh, well, poor guy, absolute power corrupts absolutely. He got corrupted by absolute power. What did you expect to happen? Shame. You know, millionaire complex. I, however, like everybody, have thought, what would I do if I became obscenely wealthy? Like, and I don't have, like, you know, supercar fantasies. I would travel, like, really hard. I would pretty much always be traveling. But I would like to have, and I'm talking about, like, when you've got God money. You've got a couple of million in the bank and you've got, like, a holiday house in Belito with a golf there.
Yes.
I'm talking about, like, you actually can't figure out ways to spend. You've got, like, $10 billion.
Okay.
I would have a whim guy. And that would be his
a
job.
Whim
or a whim guy? Lady. But, the, you know, that could be misconstrued by job title. A whim guy, a whim person, their job would just be to make whims happen. So I would be like, right, I've got a whim. Like, I want like 1,000 pineapples to be like provided to the people of this community because they're nice.
Yeah.
Or like, yes, like I want to skywrite. I love my girlfriend a little extra today. So there will be like one of those skywriting planes with a message. It must be there in an hour.
And
whim guy
on the whim.
Plane in the sky, please. You've got 45 minutes.
And doesn't
matter what.
It
yeah, it doesn't matter what it costs. He gets bonuses based on how satisfied I am. And none of my whims would not be creepy whims. At least I like to hope not. But they would be creative and they would be completely ludicrous. I would put up billboards. Like, if it was my friend's birthday, I'd put a billboard up on the nearest main road to where he lives on his route to work. That's like, Gumpy's a dickhead.
Firstly, I have a friend named Gumpy.
It's,
but anyway,
it's a nickname.
Oh, there you go.
Greg.
Yeah.
He's responsible for me feeling a bit ragged this morning and being a little bit late.
Well, yeah. Look at that. So this is only just, it was inevitable. Hollywood did have to do something in response to this. So now they have a new code of conduct. And in wrapping up the five things you need to know, I think the longest ever that has taken like 30 minutes. I love this.
We're here to chat.
Exactly. Gareth is probably excited over this. Wits University has unveiled a fossil of a woman buried deep in the caves of Sterkfontein for almost 3.5 million years ago. So a paleontologist, oh my goodness. Let's take this from the top. Paleoanthropologist. That thing. Yes.
That's a person who's an anthropologist, so a study of humankind and human beings, and a paleo part. Digging old shit up out the ground.
So you put the two together.
Fossil stuff.
You learn something new every day. Ron Clark, he discovered the fossil now named Littlefoot at the cradle of humankind. The fossil is significant as it's one of the most complete skeletons found in southern Africa and one of the oldest. So Clark has revealed the complete assembled fossil of the 3.5 million year old woman called Littlefoot. There's a video attached as well. There's a whole press release, so you can search for that on the interweb and find out more about that. Like, it's interesting because Ron Clark says the woman's feet were found first, and it took him and his team almost 20 years to excavate all the bones of the I'm not going to try naming that Australopithecus. Yeah,
man, it's also like it's another vocation, it's another job where hopefully you get a university and or government grant and they're like, cool, we'll pay you enough money to live your life, but you go and do this work. And you go and you dig up the same fossil for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then you get it out and then it's there for the world to see and it's on the record and you say, cool, carbon dating tells us this thing's this old. And so that science is pretty sound. So we believe that. And here it is intact. And now we know what our ancestors, distant ancestors, looked like. What did you say? 3.5 million years ago.
Yeah.
Mind blowing. And, you know, it's you say numbers like this, you toss numbers about like 3.5 million years ago, and you part of your brain just files it under lank old. But to consider how long ago that is in human evolution, like most of what we know and recall and remember of civilization, you know, from the Sumerians and the Persian Empire and, you know, the colonization of the world and the wars fought across Europe and just like being able to build boats that could, you know, being able to travel out of your own country, developing language and writing, most of that is kind of in the last 10,000, and if you stretch it back, maybe 15,000 years. But for 10,000 years, we've been what we consider our history, going all the way through ancient Greece, ancient Rome, Sumeria, the, you know, Turkish Empire, all the many, many massive kingdoms and empires that have come and gone. Some of them have lasted a couple hundred years, and some of them have lasted 2,000 or 3,000 years. And these are like the oldest and most prevalent civilizations in our history. All of that in 10, maximum 15,000 years. And then you think a million years. I mean, that's not even like 1% of a million years. So,
jeez.
I'm trying to do maths now. I'm like, 10,000 is not 1% of a million. No, it's 1%, 10,000 is 1% of
maths.
Yes, 10,000 is 1%
in this place. Oh, not our strongest thing.
Point
but
is,
I get your point.
We're talking about it's like all of our known kind of history that we consider the history of mankind, so to speak, prior to which everything's lost in antiquity and is ancient, is like less than a percent of that. That's just we've been like living as humans in some or another form, evolving for so long. And it was all happening like right here at Sterkfontein and these kind of areas. It's, I don't know, it kind of blows my mind just thinking the world would have been so different. The animals that Littlefoot would have been hanging out with would all be extinct right now. I don't know. This kind of stuff blows my mind. The atmosphere would have been different.
Like, and I hate to sound like one of those like ignorant Americans, but really, it's the motherland.
See,
this just proves we are in the motherland.
Dude, I was meaning to bring this up, and I'd love to chat to Gareth about this purely because I think he would just find it particularly interesting because it's part of his jaw. But I got my genetic ancestry tested recently, and I got the results back.
Did you
like
go to the Wits Center?
No, there's a company, and I forget the name of it now. A friend of mine. Introduced me to a friend of his that works at this place that does genetic testing, and they do it for all number of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might have health issues that need a genetic test. They test genetic markers. So how it works is I paid R1,000 for it, and I waited about 6 weeks, and I got my results back, and they send you a PDF with like a explanation of which haplogroup you come from, and then, you know, where the origins are. So they don't tell you like you are – 86% white, you know, like 6% black, 4% Asian. It's something, you know, to just experience a technology malfunction.
That's one of those. I was like, damn it.
They don't tell you, like, okay, you are this percentage of these different shades of, you know, beige to brown to black. But they do say, okay, you get your maternal heritage tested and your paternal heritage tested. So they go your mother's line of mothers.
Okay.
That's one thing that they test, and your father's line of fathers. Women can only test their maternal lineage because they don't get a chromosome from their father.
X and Y.
Anyway, yeah. Moral of the story is they don't tell you this is the percentage of what you are. They show you where in the world your common ancestry, going all the way back to the people that first moved out of Africa and then split into more and more groups. So it split. A bunch of dudes start going north out of Africa. They split into different groups to go in different directions. Mm-hmm. They split into different groups to go into different directions, and eventually they cover the whole world. So they show
what
you.
What do they need for this?
They do a little swab.
Just
in your
a little
mouth.
Swab,
yeah,
and
it's
that's
like
it.
It's like an earbud, and they jaw it on the inside of your cheek, and then they jaw it around your teeth a little bit, so it's like well and truly covered, and they stick it in like a sealed thing. Uh-huh. They take two, so they've got a spare one just in case.
Okay.
And then you wait. So then they show you like a heat map. So basically they say these are the areas in the world and the different populations in the world that have the percentages of sharing your most common genetics, where people with the same common genetics as you are most concentrated. So you get a map of the world and it looks like a heat map.
Mm-hmm.
So on my mom's side, I was super disappointed about how white I am. I'm honestly, no, I was hoping for some, like, I was hoping there was this little hot patch somewhere. No, I'm serious. Like somewhere cool, like Ethiopia, or like somewhere where just people aren't just boring and white. Because being a white male is the least hip thing you can be. And I was just hoping I was a little bit more interesting. On my mom's side, like lots of Northern Europe, lots of Finland, a little bit of Spain, and the rest just all kind of Russia, Scandinavia, and a bit of the UK. No, white as.
You are Snow White.
No, my mom's like a broad mix of all the different flavors of white. And my old man's side, it's just like UK. You are like your genetic.
You are as white as they come.
Your genetic compatriots come from here. And I was like super, I was just, like I said, I was really disappointed that there hasn't been a bit more adventure in the breeding habits of my ancestors. But it's interesting to know, man. It really is super interesting to know. Then they tell you other stuff about you, like they test for a few other common DNA markers. Like I have slow caffeine metabolism. I am lactose tolerant, so I can bang the cheese with no problem.
Wow.
And I have a medium chance of going bald, which is already happening, so good call there. And I have a medium potential for alcohol dependency, mid-level.
So this is like you can find out a heck of a lot.
And they tell you your blood type and a couple of other things, yeah. Yeah,
I'm down for this.
Yeah, R1,000 well spent, man. It's like entertainment budget, file it under curiosity.
Yeah,
a little bit of disappointment. I really wish I just was a bit hipper, man. I wish I could say to people like I've got like a bit of Uzbek heritage and like, you know, a little bit of like Uganda here and there. But like, nap.
God, I'll quote one of my favorite lines from a TV series called Black-ish, and one of the characters there says, "I'm cool and I'm black." Which is cool, so I'm cool twice. Like, sorry, God, but yeah, like, yeah, just like me, I'm cool.
I'm not only white, which isn't cool, I'm not actually a cool white oak either, so I'm double oak.
You're a cool white oak to me, okay?
Oh, thanks, man.
You're just a bucket of tons of fascination, so I'm so excited you're here this morning. Just as you wrap up the first hour of the Gareth Cliff Show this morning, and a bit of a quick set by Sia, I want you actually to just Google this guy, and if you need any sort of inspiration, this is the guy for you. His name is Victor Vermeulen, V-I-C-T-O-R. I just went back to high school. Did he have that war cry, victory, victory is our cry? V-I-C-T-O-R-I.
Yes.
Victory, victory. Yeah, sorry, as I spelled Victor. Anyway, no, I'm sidetracked. Victor Vermeulen, he is this amazing, amazing speaker who just happens to be quadriplegic as well. But he uses his life story and how he never gave up to inspire others. He had this promising future ahead of him back in 1993. He was rated as the best and up-and-coming cricket, as one of the best up-and-coming cricket players, and played for SA's under-19s team. And just one accident changed the entire course of his life and set him on a path that would actually inspire everyone around him and lead to a very well-received book. He was only 19 years old when just casually he was diving into a swimming pool and hit the bottom of the pool.
Just my whole body goes cold.
Just one moment can change everything. And that broke his neck. The break left him paralyzed instantly. He used his love for his mother to then push him through the early days of recovery. He says this was a very hard time for my mum. And I because just a few months before my accident, my father had been shot and killed. And I didn't want to die and leave my mom alone. Imagine. At the time of his accident, his future was looking promising. And the accident could have been a setback, but instead he used it as a whole new platform. He says, on the way to the hospital, I lapsed into a week-long coma. When I awoke, I made a conscious choice from the beginning that I need to make the best of my situation, but it's a daily choice and a daily struggle, which I like. You know, all of us, despite whatever we're going through, waking up, we'll have daily choices and we'll have daily struggles. That's the truth of the matter.
And here's me feeling sorry for myself because I only got to sleep after midnight and I had a few drinks in me and then
this is
had to get up all early.
This is exactly what I want to do, okay? Yeah. So Victor says he considered, you know, he's considered the joker amongst his friends and decided to become a motivational speaker 4 years after his accident when he was 23. He says, my friends told me that I motivate them daily and I should use that to my advantage to motivate others. I started out by talking to a youth group at a church and that was basically the start of my career. He has now traveled all over South Africa as well as America and Canada, inspiring many, many people with his talks. He was able to write his own book titled The Victor Within. Love that title. Which was released in 2000 and sold more than 75,000 copies. So he basically rounds off by saying, I definitely don't have all the answers. I had to work through a lot and find myself too. I always tell people that it's not a problem if it can be fixed. And hopefully that allows them to look at things differently. I hope I can keep making a difference in others' lives and make people smile. So Google him. He has this amazing, amazing, fascinating story. And you want to hear him speak and hear more of his story. His name is Victor Vermeulen. So that for Sit by Sia this morning. 5 things you need to know, done and dusted. Gord is in. We have so much to catch up on. We have the weekend ahead. Still want to find out what exactly transpired last night with you and Amanda as well, who's still donning her glasses. But it's a Friday morning. Thank you so much for having us on. It's the second hour of the Gareth Cliff Show coming up in just a bit.
This is CliffCentral.com.